Welcome to the Jefferson County Podcast for the People. I'm your host today. I'm Helen Hayes. I'm the Director of Public Information for Jefferson County. And we are going to be talking property taxes today. And with us, we have Maria Knight, who is Chair of the Board of Equalization. We have Rhonda Holsey joining us from the Tax Collector's Office. And we have Charles Winston, who is with the Tax Assessor's Bessemer Division Office. And we have John Poe, who is the Chief Deputy Tax Assessor for Birmingham and the downtown Jefferson County Courthouse. So welcome, everybody. Thanks so much for being here. I feel like it's the best thing that we just kind of start at the beginning of the whole property tax process. And Maria, I think that starts with the Board of Equalization and how somebody gets the value for their property for the property tax. How does that work?
Well, there are a couple different ways that we can establish value. We have the cost approach, and we look at what does it actually cost to build a particular improvement minus depreciation, and then we add the land. That would be the cost approach. There's also the sales comparison approach for existing properties, where we will look at homogeneous properties in a certain zone and within a neighborhood, similar properties, similar construction type, similar construction materials, similar age, similar size, and we will find a median, and we will measure other properties against that median, either plus or minus. If the subject has more deferred maintenance, well, then that might add some depreciation. If it has some functional obsolescence, that might add, you know, some minus influences and things of that nature. So then the next approach would be the income approach. And the income approach is based on the amount of income that a property produces. And those generally are like hotels in some of the commercial leased areas, the rented areas. So we have those three approaches that we use to establish value.
And so when you guys go out every year, you don't look at every property every year. How does that work? How does that valuation process happen?
We have cycles that we work, and one of those cycles is called the 25% review. And we are required by law to visit each property every 4 years. So we divide the county into quarters, and we go and look at those properties. And we're looking to ensure that the footprint has not changed, that the improvement is still there, or that whether or not an improvement has been added to a parcel of land. So doing 25% review, we're trying to true up our inventory. The next cycle is going to be field work, where we rely heavily on building permits that are sent to us to determine if a home has gone from a one level 1,200 square foot property to a two level 2,200 square foot property, so that we will have the correct value to use for taxation. That would be some of our field work that's driven by building permits, or just by regular site visits, taxpayers calling to let us know. Taxpayers actually have an obligation, according to the code, to let us know when their improvements change. So sometimes we get those calls to let us know that the property has indeed changed and there's more value. And not just only with increasing value, but when the value decreases. If for some reason something like an in-ground pool has been filled in, or if the garage has been taken off, or things of that nature. A fire, the home has been destroyed by fire, or a natural disaster of some sort. So we need to know that as well. And it's particularly good for us to have a date to document that, because we're driven by the lien date of October 1st of the prior year. So taxes are paid a year in arrears. So we need to be able to document event actually occurred that changed the value of the property so that the correct value will be reflected in your tax bill since it's in arrears.
And so if there is a change, or I guess if there's an increase, citizens get a notice, right?
Yes. The Code of Alabama requires us to send out a valuation notice when the value of the property increases from 1 year over the next, or if the boundaries change. And we send out a valuation letter. In the past year, it's been this 5x7 yellow postcard, but we changed to the letter to get more information for our taxpayers to know, you know, the documentation that we like to have. We send that out to let people know that your value has changed. When you get that letter, that signifies the start of the protest period. The code allows 30 days to register for a protest hearing. Now, you don't have to have that protest held within those 30 days, but you do have to register in writing that you would like to protest the value that's been established for your property. And of course, we're in the technology age, so you can go online, you can mail it in, or you can bring it into our office.
So that kind of brings us, Rhonda, to the part and the cycle when your property taxes are due. And this time of year, people are getting those. It's time for your property tax to be due. So essentially, that's too late to protest your property tax, but it is time to pay it. So can you walk us through, Rhonda, kind of different ways that people can, you know, check their property tax, pay it? I know there's online options, but, you know, we've also had some questions recently. Maybe people felt like they didn't get a notice. How does all that work?
Well, it's always accessible on our online system, but taxes become due October 1st and you're billed right around that time. And they become delinquent January 1st. You have that period of time to pay without penalty. Once January 1st comes around, you start paying penalties and interest. You can pay online at jccal.org. And you just click on property taxes once you get to the departmental stuff. You can pay in person or any of our locations. We have a Bessemer location, a Hoover location, a Gardendale location, Center Point, and Hoover. We do not accept credit cards in-house. The only way you can pay by credit card is online. It has to be cash or check. And as of February 28th of every year, we stop taking personal checks. It's cash or certified funds.
Okay. So talk a little bit about, so you said until February. What happens if somebody doesn't pay their property tax by that time?
What happens is you just keep accruing penalties and interest. Every day, the penalties, the interest changes daily. You have all the way up until May to pay your taxes, normally like the third Tuesday in May. I don't have that exact date for this year yet. You have all the way up until May to pay your taxes. Once, if you don't pay them by May, then they're going to go through a sale process. It's not even a sale process this year. It's a tax lien auction, which is another thing entirely different, which we're still working through that. So once we get more information about that, we can get that out to you. But like I said, we're still working through that tax lien process.
Okay.
It's basically like we're going to put your parcel out there for sale on an online system and people will be able to bid on it. They don't own the property. They don't own the property. It's just another lien against your property.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good. And that's some good information. And that's a long period of time. And I imagine if people have questions in between that time, they can come into the courthouse. They can come to the and talk to you about any issues they might have with paying that tax.
Correct. They can. And one other thing I want to put out there also, we do a part payment plan for people that are struggling. But we only do it between October 1st and December 31st. you can set up to 4 payments. So if you can't pay that all at one time, all you have to do is contact our office, and we're more than happy to do that for you.
That is great information. All right. So I'm going to go back to you, Maria. I have one other question. So property values increased this year kind of across the board because it was a hot housing market. A lot of people want to associate the hot housing market with an increase in property taxes. Is that necessarily true? What is that formula and how does that work?
It really is an increase in value. So what we do is try and reflect what the market is doing. So generally, if the market increases, your property value will increase. But we generally just reflect what we see in the market activities. Remember, we talked about the 3 approaches, one being the sales comparison. So we're looking at sales to see if the sales indicate that a particular property may be $55 per square feet. But if the sale says, no, looks like those properties are selling at $65 per square feet, we'll use that 65 in determining property value. But if your property is different than the average in the neighborhood, then you need to bring that to our attention. And that's when the protest season allows you to present that evidence. But if you get your tax bill in October, you're much too late to start protesting. We do property valuation notices in the springtime. Generally, late April would be a good time to contact us. But because we don't know the amount of work that we have to work our deeds and run the numbers on what the deeds look like. It depends on how fast the deeds are recorded and how fast we can get them and the number of deeds. So we have a huge volume of deeds that we have to work to determine what the average per square foot is. And then we put that in a sales ratio study that we send to the state for approval. Once we get the approval, because the purpose is to have equity of similar properties. So we will measure a house in Mountain Brook against other similar homes in Mountain Brook, a house in Homewood against other similar homes in Homewood. Homewood is a hodgepodge of all kinds of different things right now. You've got some original bungalows that are 1,200 square feet. And then, of course, we've got some larger homes that have purchased those older homes and raised the improvement that's there and then add another $1 million into the improvement. So we would measure that type structure against an original bungalow. So all of that information is used to do the sales ratio study. And again, it depends on how much work we have to do in any one particular period when we will finish. So generally around mid-April is a good time to start checking our website because we're posted, you know, to let you know that the protest period has started. As well, we advertise in the classified for 3 weeks to say that the protest registration period is open. Now, there are 2 levels to protest period. We're actually having protest hearings and we're in early November, even though those valuation notices went out in June. So we'll come in and talk with our appraisal staff, bring evidence. So if your square footage is incorrect and you have a recent appraisal, bring that. If you have damage to your property, bring pictures to show us what your property looks like. Generally, we only see the exterior. We don't get a chance to see the interior. So we need to know the condition of your property. So photos, repair receipts, repair estimates, things of that nature are important for us in the protest process. Once the protest hearing has been done, we will send you a letter in the mail with a written notification of what the value is, whether that value decreases, stays the same, or the value could actually increase. If you are not satisfied with the results from the preliminary hearing, you can elect to go to the 3-member board. The board will again, you'll have the opportunity to have a hearing date set. You'll come before the board, present your information. The board will review it and make a decision as to whether or not the evidence supports a change. After that, if you are not satisfied with the notice that you received from your board hearing, your final value, you have the option to appeal to circuit court. So it's very, very important to pay attention to the valuation notices that we mail out. We do a couple of things, kind of public service announcements that we've done to notify people that the hearings are open. Again, because, you know, we're talking June this past year of 20 when the notices were mailed out. And in October, it's much too late to request a protest hearing when you get your tax bill. So not only should you notice, pay attention and look for your property tax bill, but also look for your notice. Check online, call our office to see, you know, if we can give you an estimate of when we think the protest period will start.
Now let's go over to the tax assessor's offices. We have Mr. John Poe, the chief deputy tax assessor for Jefferson County in the downtown courthouse. And then we have Mr. Charles Winston, who is the tax assessor for Bessemer. So, gentlemen, when it comes to tax season and property taxes, there are exemptions that are available. Can you guys talk a little bit about that?
Sure. Recently, the legislature has approved for the counties who can to have a process for people to be able to claim these things online. And so shortly here, Jefferson County on the Birmingham side will be upgrading our system to allow for people to be able to claim for their exemptions online. The process for exemptions follow these three paths. One, the owner of the property or the owner of record of the property is the only one that can claim for the exemption for that parcel. Two, there are several different types of exemptions. One being homestead, the other one being, you know, what we call over 65 and disability. And those are actually considered, those are actually titled, you know, Act 48 exemptions. Because that was the legislative act that created those exemptions, either over 65 or disability. So I'm gonna start with the homestead first.
Okay.
The homestead is a portion of your municipal tax because you claim this as your primary residence. So in order to get a homestead exemption, you first have to establish that this is your primary residence. Okay. Second, I'm going to move into over 65. So over 65, you can be over 65 and get a portion of your taxes exempt, and that's the state's portion. So the state determines that once you reach the age of 65, they're not going to collect their portion of your tax. But you still have the city, the county, the city, county, and of course the schools that are involved in that taxing piece. All right. Now, there's a separate piece that you also can qualify for after the age of 65, which is called age and income. So your income has to be less, your taxable income has to be less than $12,000 a year in order for you to claim age and income. Or you can swear by affidavit that you don't file taxes. And or you tell us that it's just, you know, under 12,000, and we can go through that process as well. To verify that, you're going to have to bring us, you know, either, you know, a document from the IRS, basically, you know, outlining your income on your tax returns that we look at that determines your taxable income. So you need to bring those documents into the office in order for us to look at that. Third is disability. There are several forms of disability. Age and income means that you're totally exempt from taxes. So if you're over 65 and you make less, you make $12,000 or less in your taxable income, you're totally exempt from taxes. That means your tax bill will be zero. Disability operates the same way if you're 100% disabled. Permanently and totally disabled is what the law says, or the statute says. Because of, you know, the advent of modern medicine, doctors typically don't want to make that statement that someone is permanently or totally disabled when they write those letters. Social Security does, typically their letters don't say that you're permanently and totally disabled, but there's a function, there's a piece on there that we use to kind of determine it. Also, military folks have a percentage of disability. So for instance, a lot of the military folks will come in and the military actually assigns a percentage. They'll say 20%, 40%, whatever, but we can't grant a disability exemption unless it's 100%, you know, disability.
So, Mr. Winston, is there anything different in Bessemer? And is your best guidance for people, if they're not sure, maybe just to actually come in to the office?
Well, there's nothing different from what he's saying in Birmingham that would be different in Bessemer, whether or not a county or grant successor, absolutely, because we prefer to provide the citizen with person-to-person, hands-on service. And, of course, because of some laws and privacy laws and all of that, need to work out the quirks as to how they will upload the information to the system. So we're still staffed and fully prepared to receive citizens when they come. Disability, permanent, 100% permanent disability is not age sensitive. So most people who gets only Social Security and they're over 65 are usually pretty much tax exempt. And most likely they don't even file income tax. So they're tax exempt. What happened is oftentimes folks listen to what the public is saying and not the facts, and they don't apply for it. Every exemption that you receive, you have to apply for it. Overdue taxes, penalties, that's the tax collector's job. If you get a bill that asks you for money, it's from the tax collector. And I'm often having to qualify that. So you send me a bill. I say, no, you can get a bill from the office that I serve because we don't send bills. We give discount. As a tax assessor, our responsibility is to maintain the listing of the properties in the Bessemer cutoff. That's a little less than a half million parcels of land. And then we maintain a current map of all of the property in our jurisdiction in the county. I said earlier, anything that you can do in Birmingham, you can do in Bessemer, except redeem property. You have to redeem property in the jurisdiction, whether it's where that property actually lies. So unique opportunities. And the best thing for people to do is to call in or stop in, because oftentimes the discounts and that they should be receiving is incumbent upon the to apply for the exemption, to apply for those staff to be able to know that when they age, reach 65 or those kind of things. So seeking credible information, this kind of broadcast and the county reaching out to make sure it's available to citizens is a wonderful thing. And that's the other reason that we're selecting to maintain the staff to be on hand to answer people's questions personally, to make sure they come in and file, and they file all of the documents that are necessary so that summarily someone's not taken off or take a discount taken off that they should have received or could have received if somebody, a live person, would actually say to them, you need this or you need to file this. And we cross-train our staff so that hopefully when people come into our office, we make them aware of all of the discounts that's available to them, all the exemptions that are available to them, and not necessarily just what you came to ask about. And that makes us a lot more productive and a lot more citizen sensitive.
Well, that sounds great. So I think the bottom line from both of you is for if you're over 65, it's probably worth trying to come down and talk to somebody in one of your offices about what exemptions may be available to them.
That's true. Come see us. We're there Monday through Friday. We love to serve the public. That's what I'm elected to do. That's what John is paid to do.
That's correct.
Well, I think that's a great way to wrap up the podcast. We are all here to serve the citizens of Jefferson County. I want to thank everyone for their time today. And if citizens are listening and they have ideas on other subject matters they'd like to hear about, you can email me at hayshayshh@jccal.org. And I hope you'll join me next time for the Jefferson County Podcast for the People.